drive down Interstate 35, you look to the left and it's kind of flat, and then it rises up. You look to the right and it kind of is very flat for a while. There's a gravel pit out there that Hallett's runs. That is all gravel underneath there, and so it's just a huge area where that we can use for water supply. And I can say that not as many communities have that much stuff. So they have some of it, but not as much as maybe we have. And so we kind of live in a, if you, for better lack of a better term, a sweet spot for you know, groundwater and groundwater supply.
And so the alluvial aquifer would be just the general, any aquifer that comes from a river?
Right. So it would consist of the deposits of the river as it meanders back and forth. It deposits sand and gravel as well as in the bottom of the channel, as well as overbank deposits that are the silt deposits. And those, over time, as the thing migrates back and forth, it builds laterally those sediments. It also builds vertically. So you get an aquifer built on top of whatever was there to begin with. So it may have cut down somewhat, but then it just builds up from there. And generally along streams, that's why it's oftentimes, you know, you can find pretty good water supply right along streams, you know, that are pretty big. I mean, you know, most of the major rivers in Iowa, the Iowa, the Cedar, the Des Moines, Raccoon, all have these kinds of alluvial systems that are associated with them. All right, so, but underneath all this story is the vast network of buried valleys that are in Iowa that are below this, and that, you know, sometimes go to 100 to 150 feet below the ground surface, and you don't see any vestige of them. And those are all over Iowa, and they're all connected, which to some degree to some larger channel. So there was a network of these buried channels that were major rivers way back when, before the glaciers advanced probably, and that were very active as part of our landscape processes.
When was the glacial age that brought down the Des Moines Lobe and all of the silt that we see on top of it?
Well, the initial glaciation to, say, to Des Moines, which kind of is why it's called the Des Moines Lobe, was about 14 to 14.5,000 years ago. Then there are a series of maybe advances or retreats gradually back up towards Minnesota. Here in Ames, it's probably about, the ice was here maybe about 13,700 years. Process occurred is still kind of under investigation. We don't know if it was one big advance and then it retreated sequentially or if it was a series of small advances. But that pretty much covered up, you know, everything that we see on the landscape today. But there were other glaciations before that that go back 500,000 and maybe even millions of years. And the total glaciation period is probably about 2.5 million years. So we could have had glaciations back that far that we didn't even know about.
Now, when I think of groundwater, the water that's underground, I tend to think of it as being fairly clean, that the limestone would filter things out and just the process of running through all of those grains of sand and gravel would help purify it. Is that still the case?
Well, yes and no. So what we found over the years is that many of the treatment processes that we used to use, which generally incorporate, say, just running groundwater through a sand filter, like it would in a natural aquifer, does take out stuff. But there are many things that are in our system now that weren't in our system, say, 100 years ago, man-made chemicals. And we're also seeing that these aquifers don't do a very good job. Any aquifer, even a limestone aquifer, they don't do a very good job of taking out all the bacteria that might be in the water and also things like viruses, pharmaceuticals, hormones. All these things are probably to some extent in groundwater at some point because we're using those in the environment now.
several times because of the nitrate in the groundwater that they were drinking from the well. And Jane Smiley even said that it was a book that she read by Barry Commoner right when she arrived in Iowa and found out about this issue of nitrates in the groundwater that kind of prompted the writing of the book or contributed to her creative process. So are nitrates still an issue?
Yeah, nitrates have always been a problem, and there have been a number of studies, two in specifically that have been done at the statewide level to sample for nitrate and pesticides and other things that might be in our water. And it turns out that certain areas of Iowa tend to have more nitrate than others, and part of that, I think, is due to what the geology is in these particular places. So here in central Iowa, we don't tend to have a huge problem with it, and part of the reason for that is that a lot of that nitrate gets eaten up by microbes before it gets down to the point where it would get into somebody's well. Still doesn't mean that there aren't problems with well construction that could cause this, but in terms of natural movement of water down from the surface, which is where the nitrate would come from, there are other areas to the south of us and to the west and to the east of us that have higher nitrate concentrations according to surveys that have been done. And these are actually private wells, so these are wells, not city wells, but private wells. And of course, if you're in a city water supply, you can't supply water to your customers if it's over the EPA limit of, 10 milligrams per liter. So they can't do that. But as a private homeowner, you have to test it to figure out if it's that high. So again, I mean, one of the things I can emphasize is that, we hear a lot about streams and high nitrates and algal blooms and all that stuff in Iowa and our not so great water quality in streams. We can't divorce that totally from what's happening in groundwater because the two are in connection. Right? Every part of the water cycle is connected. It's not, a groundwater box and a surface water box. They're all one big pot. So whatever you're doing to one is probably going to end up affecting the other one. And so the more that we put into our streams, the chances are higher that we're going to see some of that into our drinking water, at least if we're in connection with that. So it's an interesting thing. But we still do have spots where nitrate is high. Many of those are related to older wells that aren't up to code, and people tend to, once they have a well at their farm, they tend to just leave it unless there's a problem. We also tend to get bacteria through that route from surface bacteria that gets in there. So there's still threats to drinking water, particularly for private water supplies, of which there are thousands of private wells in Iowa. So, that's the area I think that we need to kind of look at in terms of water quality.
I was talking to Margaret James, the environmental health director of Story County, asked her how many private wells are there in this county. She said she thought about 5 to 10% of Story County's population is served by private wells.
That's probably right. I mean, Margaret would know better than anybody else probably. And we do, as a matter of course now with any land exchange, if you sell your house or something, you have to have a test of the water before you sell it just to make sure you're not passing on a bad water supply to somebody else. But I think people tend to get complacent about testing their own water, and I absolutely would recommend that people do that at least every year because things happen. Things happen to wells. Things happen to the aquifer. Things happen in your watershed. All those things are dynamic. So it doesn't do any good to say, well, I tested it 10 years and it's okay. I think you need to be vigilant about water supplies. Some people have even called me and they're doing tests for all kinds of things in their well, which gets really expensive. But generally, if you find some evidence of bacteria in your well, and if you have nitrate coming in your well, that's an indication that there maybe is a well problem, and you need to kind of get the well looked at. Because sometimes the casing will break, it will start leaking, or your seal at the top of the well is not very good, and all those things can contribute to having water quality deterioration in your well.
This is a Friday edition of Clean Water Radio on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Greta Anderson, and you are listening to my conversation with Bill Simpkins, a hydrogeologist in ISU's geology department, about Central Iowa's groundwater. Coming up, he explains what makes the tap water in Ames taste so good. You knew it tasted good, right? I've heard the term shallow well quality source?
Yeah, generally, if you have a water quality problem and you have a shallow well, they'll tell you to drill deeper. So, and most of the time that works. So in Iowa, the general kind of shallow versus deep cutoff is like 50 feet. So anything less than 50 feet is shallow, anything more than 50 feet is deep. And a lot of our literature in the state is kind of geared towards that. So generally, in the past, the water quality in these deeper systems has been better for a variety of reasons. They may have to do with the chemistry of the aquifer that's deeper. They also, deeper wells would generally have a longer travel time for a contaminant at the surface to get to those wells. So that what that means is that in your lifetime, you may not see the nitrate that was put on the that was coming in the aquifer yesterday get down to the deeper aquifer. But certainly shallow wells are much more in communication with the surface. A lot of these are water table aquifers, which means the water table is at the surface, and that's where all that stuff hits that's coming in from the surface. All it infiltrates to the water table. And then you get that stuff in there a lot quicker. So the cycle time in those shallow aquifers is much quicker, and so that tends to get stuff in faster, and that's why you see it. So if you start seeing a lot of stuff come into your well, generally the well driller will tell you, well, just let's go down to the next aquifer down, and it's probably fine. Sometimes, though, that doesn't solve the problem. And what we're finding in other areas of the country is that we're finding things in deeper wells that we never thought actually could ever get there. There was this recent study in Madison, Wisconsin, which has wells at 250 meters. So we're talking a depth that most of us wouldn't think anything would get down to. And they were finding viruses from sewer lines down at that depth in a municipal well. Now, they were treating the water, which is fine. They chlorinate it. Everything's fine. But the fact that it could get down there means that our safety factor for assuming that if we go deeper, we're going to be immune to these things. Yeah, we may be immune to nitrate, but things like viruses may be able to get down there, and then there may be other compounds that, you know, are used out there in the environment that may get down there too. So not to kind of give the gloom and doom story here, but if you're in a municipal water supply, you're in good shape. If you're on a private water supply, you really have to be vigilant about testing and kind of being aware of what could be out there.
And also the cost has come into the discussion as well, the cost of water when there are such high levels of contaminants, mm-hmm. then, or perhaps, new contaminants that they didn't have dozens of years ago, that cost more money for the municipalities or the rural water associations to treat.
Right, and some of them they can't treat. I mean, there's really not much technology for some of these chemicals to really do much with. They come into the system, especially like pharmaceuticals, they come into the system, well, at least the water treatment system, they wouldn't treat them there. Even on the back end for the waste effluent system, they don't really treat for them there either. So this stuff just moves right on through most of the time. Other more common things, yeah, they do treat for. And the problem is that, especially in Des Moines' case, where they've got so much input of high nitrate water, they have to go to extraordinary expense to take that out. Fortunately, here in Ames, we don't have to deal with that because the aquifer is such that a lot of the nitrate gets taken out by microbes before it ever gets to where the intake of the well is. We have a very, very active microbial environment that takes out a lot of the stuff that causes other people problems.
Do those microbes cause problems then in turn?
Well, yeah, funny you should mention that. So there's no free lunch in this business. And so what we have is we have no nitrate, so that's good, because then we'd have to, if we had high nitrate, we'd have to be treating it. On the flip side, the aquifer is very chemically, what we call chemically reducing, which means that it tends to take compounds like nitrate, it'll reduce it eventually to nitrous oxide and eventually to nitrogen gas. It takes sulfate and reduces it to hydrogen sulfide. And in fact, we even get a little bit of methane produced in this aquifer. That's not by itself bad. In fact, some of the places where that's the most active is our best tasting water in Ames, for reasons that are really unknown to most of us. All right, I don't even understand it. But in any case, what happens is that this stuff is really tough on the hardware that's in the well. It's a very corrosive environment, and it also tends to grow iron oxidizing bacteria, which tends to oxidize the iron and starts to coat the intake ports on the well environment that this water exists in. On the other hand, that same environment wreaks havoc on our wells and keeps the city busy trying to keep rehabbing them and making them more productive.
Well, this brings up another situation. I know at Crestview Motorhome, which is just west on Lincoln Way of the city of Ames, it's just maybe just a few hundred yards from the border, I know they have a really bad well. It's a public well that is serving the people who live in the mobile home, and everyone in the mobile home complains that the water is brown from iron, from rust.
Right.
And so it sounds like this guy has pretty much the same problem that Ames has, but just probably not the resources to deal with this expensive problem.
Yeah, I'm not intimately familiar with that problem. I know about it, and I know that they're on their own water supply there, which has always baffled me because they're close enough to probably hook on to city, and I'm not sure what the deal is with whether they don't want to, or it's too expensive or whatever. These kind of common water supplies are always kind of an issue because they oftentimes don't have the resources to really do what they need to do to make it a really good water supply. And any well that you put in central Iowa is going to have iron problems. All right, it doesn't matter whether it's in the sand and gravel or if it's in the limestone. I mean, I've seen people that wash their cars with this water and it leaves this brown film all over because the iron is in a reduced state. As soon as it hits air, it oxidizes and forms this thin film of rusty material everywhere it lands, even on your house. If you throw your water on your house, it'll stain the siding. I mean, I've seen this happen with people. So I'm not sure what the long-term solution for them is, but I think, long-term, I'm not sure that any of these community wells are really a good idea because you just don't have the resources, especially to disinfect the water, which is the prime directive here. I mean, you have to do that. So there are some spots in Ames where there are homes that are outside the distribution system of the Ames water supply that actually have community wells like this. This was also a possibility for the areas around Aiden Lake that are being developed out there. So that north side development, even the Rose Prairie development that was supposed to go on the west side, they were all talking about smaller well systems and also sewer and putting them on kind of community septic systems. And the city now has decided to extend sewer and water out to these areas at a fairly large cost, and they're working with the developers to do that. But that, I think,
Later in the hour, we share news from around the country and around the world regarding water issues. For instance, did you know that Nova Scotia has banned fracking? Stay tuned for that.
I think that's a good statement, but it's difficult because we can't even simulate these systems. of deep things and longer term things. And so, yeah, so it's a good thing that people need that. Well, but we need that perspective, because a lot of our stuff is, we tend to think very short term, and we also tend to think that, that everything happens within the first 4 feet of the ground. And there's a lot of stuff going on that happens below that, and we're trying to hopefully educate people on what's going on down there.
Well, just to play this out a little bit more, it seems that Iowa is such a fabulous region for farming, largely because of the water that is constantly infiltrating it, and that was infiltrating it in the past. It may
work with DNR to make sure that the extent of their drawdown in their wells is not so great that it would inflict harm on a neighboring water supply or on neighboring wells, and in fact, private wells. So a lot of these places will hire a firm to go out and do pumping tests to figure out, you know, if there's impact on water wells in the neighborhood. And they've made some adjustments, from what I understand, at a couple places where they've moved the wells further away and done that. So, you know,
One of the great pleasures of doing radio is getting to meet interesting people like Bill and like the producers of our next segment, This Week in Water. Franny Halperin and Jamie Sudler are independent radio producers from Colorado who call themselves H2O Radio. They've put together a compilation of all water-related news items around the country and the world in the past week. Here are Franny Halperin and Jamie Sudler of H2O Radio.
Here at H2O Radio, we would like to note two events that occurred during the past week. First, last Friday marked the end of World Water Week, which is organized by the Stockholm International Water Institute. The conference started in the early 1990s in Stockholm, which has gone from being one of the most unhealthy cities in terms of water quality to a place where you can swim and fish even in the center of the city. The theme of this year's conference was water and energy, and the head of the Stockholm Institute said that globally 25% of fresh water is used for energy purposes. The demand for water will increase drastically over the next few decades, and energy production will be one of its main uses. But getting the water sector and the energy sector together to agree on goals and strategies is difficult. The energy sector is global with many international and private companies, while the water sector is run mainly by public companies at local and municipal levels. Hopefully, last week's conference may have led to the two groups talking with each other. We also note that last week we celebrated the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act here in the U.S. President Lyndon Johnson signed the measure, which protects nearly 110 million acres across the country from urban development and excessive human imprints. The act reserves the land for the people, that they may use it for historic, scientific, educational, and recreational purposes. Among other things, the Wilderness Act protects raging white water rivers and snow-covered peaks.
Oil giant BP was grossly negligent regarding the Deepwater Horizon disaster. That ruling from a federal judge last Thursday about the worst offshore oil spill in American history. U.S. District Judge Carl Barbier's findings of reckless and extreme behavior means BP faces a fine under the Clean Water Act of $4,300 per barrel of oil spilled. The 153-page ruling describes repeated instances in which BP took measures to cut costs despite safety risks. Thursday's decision is among the biggest legal setbacks for BP in 4 years of litigation over the explosion, which killed 11 crew members, left oil leaking in the Gulf for months, destroyed wildlife, and fouled beaches. Scientists continue to monitor the Gulf for impacts from the spill. The Coast Guard said crude oil still occasionally washes up on beaches from Louisiana to Florida. BP said it would appeal the ruling, which would delay a final decision on the fine, as well as other pending court cases.
There has been significant opposition to the Keystone XL pipeline here in the United States and in Canada. In addition to Keystone, there is also the planned Northern Gateway pipeline that would run from Edmonton, Alberta to Kitimat, British Columbia. There, the oil would be loaded onto tankers and shipped to Asia. That plan has been delayed as proponents try to work with First Nation peoples to earn their support. While those two projects are on hold, another plan was released last week by the Alberta government to build a northerly pipeline that would take the tar sands oil to a port in the far north of the Beaufort Sea in the Arctic. There is little doubt that plans to build a pipeline through pristine areas of northern Canada will draw immense opposition due to the possibility of environmental catastrophes.
The Great Pacific Ocean Garbage Patch was discovered in 1997, but the source of all the debris has been unknown, up until now, perhaps. Researchers in Australia have developed a mathematical model that might help finger the culprits. By using models of ocean currents, mathematician Gary Froiland and oceanographer Eric Van Siebel from the University of New South Wales calculated that ocean boundaries are very different than how we've traditionally viewed them. The pair's technique maps oceans by how water moves. They've identified areas of upwelling where warmer, less salty water is rising, and areas of downwelling where currents of seawater sink into swirls of gyres. Gyres are the rotating systems of ocean currents where the garbage patches occur. The Great Pacific Garbage Patch is just one of five. Patches occur in each of the North and South Atlantic, North and South Pacific, and the middle of the Indian Ocean. Some of them are as big as the state of Texas. According to Van Sabile, cleaning up the garbage patches is beyond our current capabilities. Much of the plastic in them is so small that to skim them from the water would also remove important plankton and small animals eaten by larger fish, which highlights another problem. The toxic chemicals from plastic travels up the food chain and could eventually end up on our dinner plates.
Citing the fact that there are too many unanswered questions about hydraulic fracturing and a lack of research and regulations, the government of Nova Scotia announced that there would be no fracking allowed at this time. The decision follows the recent release of a report by a panel concluding that the province wasn't able to make fully informed decisions for or against the development of fracking without further research. There needs to be a significant period of learning and dialogue, according to the 370-page report. A spokesperson for the Council of Canadians, which had asked for a permanent ban on fracking, was nevertheless pleased with the government's moratorium. She stated that she was happy the government was actually listening to the people on this issue. A spokesperson for the Canadian Association of Petroleum Producers said that the government ignored industry experts and regulators in Western Canada, where he said fracking has been done safely for decades. The panel report calls for a baseline monitoring and regulations to be drafted before Nova Scotia even considers moving forward with fracking. It also calls for a political process to allow a community to consent to fracking if a company wants to drill there.
Now your groundwater update. The recent earthquakes in Northern California have had some unexpected consequences, pushing groundwater to the surface. The U.S. Geological Survey has received reports of dramatic water increases, as much as 20 times the average, in creeks near Napa and Sonoma. Officials there are hopeful they can capture some of the extra water for use, but are testing it to ensure it's safe for public consumption. Scientists say they've known of this phenomenon since the 1860s and have documented similar occurrences where earthquakes have opened up cracks and fissures to allow groundwater to find its way to the surface. Though times are tough in the parched Golden State, there's no one out there hoping that the big one is coming as a font for additional water. This Week in Water is a production of H2O Radio and is sponsored by Colorado WaterWise. Learn more at coloradowaterwise.org.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host, Greta Anderson, and this has been a special Friday edition we are calling Clean Water Radio, which we occupied by talking about groundwater and aquifers with Bill Simpkins of ISU's Department of Geology. The health of our aquifers is, of course, critical to our health, as aquifers shallow and deep supply most of the drinking water in central Iowa. Franny Halperin and Jamie Sudler supplied us with This Week in Water. Check out their other stories online at h2oradio.org. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard a song by Elephant Revival, a Colorado band that will be in Ames on September 25th for the Maximum Ames Festival. Local Talk is a production workshop as well as a show. If you'd like to join the team, give us a shout. Come by the station or connect with us online at khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. We are now streaming live, so you can listen to us online anywhere or check out our archived shows. As always, your participation as audience is what makes this kind of programming possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
All of us at KHOI would like you to know that no waterways were degraded in the production of today's show. KHOI cares.